Richardson out of the corner for Hennis Stroza. Vinny's got it to the line. Demers. Vinny curling to the front. Stop. Rebound. They score. They score. Brad Richardson. Series is over. And the Coyotes march on.
It's only been a couple of years since the Jets and the Predators were considered the best of the best in the Western Conference. But how quickly they fall as the Coyotes eliminate the Nashville Predators in four games, scoring in overtime yesterday as part of Elimination Friday in the NHL. And the Predators, you know, a fully healthy squad, certainly go out with a whimper and not a bang, as I referenced the Jets at the top of the show. At least the Jets have some legitimate built-in excuses. That Nashville Predators team, if I think this best-of-five qualification round and the season as a whole has shown us, is that is a flawed team right now, and it might be change afoot in Music City, USA.
Did you guys
USA.
See Brad Richardson after the game running into the dressing room and all of his teammates, you know, embracing him? I mean, Brad Richardson, a guy, you know, like a bottom six forward always, right? Like a third, fourth line guy.
Yeah.
And you'd love to see those types of guys get the overtime winning goals. But I agree with you, Drew. This Nashville Predators team has a lot of question marks, and you wonder what they're going to do moving forward, how many moves they're going to make, because it looks like their window has closed.
They just seem, yeah, the goaltending wasn't there between either Saros and Rene. The goaltending wasn't there. The forwards, you know, continue to not be able to put up good numbers, not be able to get the offensive production that they need. I mean, you have Roman Josi on the back end.
So good.
And he was so good against the Coyotes. I mean, he was a one-man wrecking crew against the Coyotes. Unfortunately, the rest of his teammates decided not to show up. And as a result, the Coyotes move on. The Predators go home.
But that series is one of those ones that it was almost, I mean, at one point, I think, weren't the Predators out shooting the Coyotes like 15-1? And it was 1-0. It was 1-0 for Arizona.
Well, you know.
I'm just saying, like, it's one of those bizarre situations, and we talked about it. It wasn't a very inspiring. I don't think I even watched very much of any of it, to be honest with you. I mean, it wasn't one of those series. We talked about it beforehand.
Wasn't a classic.
And, you know, it's crazy to think that, like, it was last week when we were talking about the start of the play-in series, and now it's already over. It seems
with the exception of the one series,
right.
the
like
Leafs and the Blue Jackets.
Right, so that everything else is just play-in, like this play-in.
Round robin.
Which, by the way, from an NHL perspective, and I know it's not the topic right now, but could that have worked out any better to have the two teams finish 2-0, two teams finish 0-2, and battling for first and second, battling for third and fourth? I just think, like, the way, you know, from an NHL perspective, that couldn't have worked out any better from them. But, you know, the Arizona and Nashville series has been, you know, and, you know, look, it's funny. People don't like Arizona. Like, I don't know. I think, like, they kind of deserve it. They've worked hard to kind of rebuild that franchise a little bit. And, you know, they were able to get it done.
The funniest thing is back in 2012, the last time they won a playoff series was against Nashville, right? So it's pretty funny that
that was just with the, oh, who were those, the brothers? What were their names for Nashville? That
Kostitsyn.
Yeah, the Kostitsyn brothers, yep. Right? Andre and Sergei, where they brought them back sort of midseason.
Yeah, they also played together on Montreal back in the day. And, I mean, I was telling Dave this off air, you know, before we started, obviously, and hopefully we're on air right now, but when you talk about, you know, that Nashville Predators team, two of the four games were one goal games, and the Predators are one goal away, obviously, from forcing a game five, right? So it's not like the Coyotes dominated the Predators. And if you watch that game, Victor Arvidsson left, I think it was late in the first period or early in the second period. I'm pretty sure it was in the first period. So they don't have Victor Arvidsson, who was really good in the series. I think he had three goals, if I'm not mistaken. So he was really good. And, you know, it wasn't just the Jofa line, because Philip Forsberg, I thought, was actually really good, you know, for the Predators. So it's not like they didn't get production. Ryan Johansson, I think, had 5 points in the series. So, I mean, yeah, Victor Arvidsson did have three goals. So Arvidsson wasn't available to them. The Predators, that is, in the overtime period. So I'm just saying, I mean, the Predators, even though I think they have a lot of questions that need to be answered and they have to make some moves in the offseason, I do think you have to remember, guys, that it's a best of five. Anything can happen. The series was very close. Like, when you break down this series, I mean, it was really close at 5-on-5. Obviously, Darcy Kemper outplayed UC Saros and Pekka Rinne, but That's all I'm saying. I mean, this series, and I agree with Dave, I didn't watch every second or every minute of the series, but I did catch a couple of the games. And, you know, you were talking about two pretty flawed teams, and it's almost like Arizona was the better of the two flawed teams.
Here's a quote from Adam Vingan's article in TheAthletic.com. Adam, of course, covers the Predators. "The Predators, who were built to win championships, are languishing in mediocrity and drifting toward irrelevance." Which is, you know, that's pretty harsh, but I think it's also fairly accurate when you look at the Predators. They, you know, David Poile's got some big decisions ahead of him in yes. terms of how you rebuild. Well, I think particularly that forward group. Yeah. How do you get that forward group to be an elite, yeah. You know, Stanley Cup contending forward group? And right. They're not right now.
And we know that Kyle Turris is a guy who's always been out there on the trade block. But you know, I mentioned Drew Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson. You know, they combined for 7 goals. So that top line was actually pretty good to me, Matt. Duchesne, he gets his first goal yesterday mm-hmm. in game number 4. I mean, this is the guy who you brought in, you know, to be your second line center, and you expected big things out of him. He didn't have a good regular season. He wasn't good in the playoffs. It's also pretty funny, guys, that you had Matt Duchesne, Artemi Panarin, and Sergei Bobrovsky, all of the big guns for the Blue Jackets, all knocked out of the playoffs before them.
And all of whom were pretty mediocre at best yeah. in these first-round
well,
qualifications.
Bobrovsky was here. Awful in yeah. Game 4.
I'm being charitable when I talk about Bobrovsky. He was terrible all year. And we'll talk more about the Panthers because it sounds like they're making a general manager switch there. It sounds like Dale Tallon is going to be out in Florida. It hasn't been officially announced by the team, but reports from Andy Strickland, who's, of course, with Fox Sports Midwest, and George Richards, who's covered the Panthers for years, seem to indicate that. But more on the Panthers later on in the show. It just is fascinating. And then you look at what happened in Edmonton with the Chicago Blackhawks. And that, to me, is just strictly goaltending. I mean, the goaltending for the Oilers was not good enough from game one on. Game one where it was Mike Smith in net for the yeah. Oilers. And
well, game one was a disaster.
Which, by the way, you yeah. called for them not to do.
I called for them to start Koskinen.
That's
because
right.
My theory being that if you go with the young guys.
Was Kenny Holland not listening to the show?
He should have been.
Or Dave Tippett, I thought they would have us tuned on. But, you know, when you start with the young guy. When you start with the old guy, you've given that vote of disconfidence to the young guy.
And Mike Smith, we should mention, is Tippett's guy going back to the Coyote days,
of
right?
course, so. But Mike Smith was bad, and then Koskinen was equally bad. I mean, you can't give up the goals that Koskinen gave up late in the games and expect to win. And sure, the Oilers threw absolutely everything they could possibly have thrown at Corey Crawford late in the game yesterday when they're battling to try and equalize and send it to overtime. Mm-hmm. And Crawford was incredible. But if you're the Oilers, I mean, it's simply that your goaltending wasn't good enough. The Blackhawks' goaltending was better. And yet another wasted year for Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, where they're not a playoff team when they absolutely should have been.
No, I agree with you 100%. The goaltending was a big issue, especially in game number one. Like, right off the bat, in a five-game series, you get smoked in game one. We know that your chances of coming back are tough, right? You got to win 3 or 4 games. Game two, guys, you know, Connor McDavid has that beautiful goal, scores the hat trick.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, okay, those are the Oilers that we expected. And then all of a sudden, I mean, you lost 2-1 goal games. It's not like the Blackhawks, again, I go back to the Coyotes-Predators series, right, guys? Like, mm-hmm. These were close series. Like, I realize they didn't go to 5 games, but when you look back at these series, if you really do a deep dive into these two series here, I mean, they were pretty close. And to me, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, I mean, these guys weren't the issue. I think the issue is that these guys always have to drive the bus, and especially if you don't get the goaltending, like you mentioned, Drew.
Yeah.
I mean, Koskinen wasn't the answer. When Smith struggled, you almost wondered if they were going to go back to Mike Smith with the way, you know, Koskinen was not good in game 3, and obviously, you know, you have to stick with the guy, you know, who won you the game in game 2. So, I mean, a guy like Andreas Athanasiou, no points in 4 games. And again, I'm not blaming him or saying that that was the reason why, but you look at some of these players, Zach Kassian, I believe he had no points. I mean, you're talking about secondary scoring. I mean, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, these are two of the best players in the league, but they can't do it every single game. They did it in game 2.
Yeah.
They were good in game 3. I mean, they weren't even bad in game 4. The point is that, you know, some of these acquisitions that the Oilers made before the trade deadline, like a guy like Tyler Ennis. Like, Tyler Ennis, to me, he was okay. I think he had a goal. But the problem is, like, That's the issue with the Oilers, and it has been the issue for how many years now, guys? We're talking about basically a two-line team, maybe even a one-and-a-half-line team, because sometimes you do see McDavid and Draisaitl on the top line, but that was the issue, again, for the Oilers. You just didn't get any depth scoring. And
you didn't get a save. When you needed right. – when you know, Koskinen and Smith gave up a lot of goals, but when you needed them to make that save and not give up another goal, they couldn't right. make
That's
that
right.
save. Particularly the goal that Koskinen gave up late in the game, in game three, where he's deep in his net, and you just can't score from that angle.
Look, you know what? I mean, look, we see it in other series. Markstrom gave up a goal against the Wild yesterday that I was like, okay, well, that's going to haunt them. And then his team comes back and bails him out and forces overtime and wins the game. But you know, you can have it happen every once in a while. And we've seen Markstrom, a guy like Markstrom, who's been pretty solid for the Canucks. He's locked it down. So if you give up a bad goal, okay, you can kind of rebound from it. But when it's consistent like that, mm-hmm. it weighs on the team because you're really in the back of your mind thinking about that potential.
To Drew's point, here are the numbers for Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith in this series. Mikko Koskinen, 3.16 goals against average, 889 save percentage. Mike Smith in one game, 11.31 goals against, 783 save Ooh. Percentage. So
awful, just awful. So the Oilers are back to looking for another goaltender. Mike Smith, an unrestricted free agent. Koskinen still has that horrendous contract where he's getting paid $4.5 million a year. When we come back, more on the qualification rounds, more on the Winnipeg Jets. We'll get to some of your comments as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Overtime is underway. JT Miller wins it forward to Brock Besser, who dumps it into the Minnesota zone to our left. Nico Sturm with it on the far boards. Couldn't get it out of the zone. Chris Tanev shoots and scores. Shot from the line just 11 seconds into overtime. And the Canucks are going to the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Chris Tanev threw it to the goal. It beats Alex Stalock. And the Canucks are back, baby. They'll move on to round one for the first time since 2015.
Sudden death last night for the Minnesota Wild, and emphasis on the word sudden because it was only 11 seconds into the overtime
Former
period.
Former Manitoba Moose Chris Tanev.
That's right. He scores for the Canucks, and the Canucks win that series 3-1. A bit of a wild and crazy pond hockey game four between the Wild and the Canucks. But Vancouver moves on. Minnesota goes into the draft lottery. Monday, of course, that'll happen. We'll find out if the Jets draft first overall, if they win the supplemental lottery, if they draft ninth overall, or if they draft what is most likely to be 10th overall in the upcoming NHL draft. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
I'm going to put you boys on the spot right now. 2010-2011 was when Chris Tanev played for the Moose. That was the year before the Jets came back. Of course, Claude Noel was the head coach of the Moose. Who led the Moose in regular season scoring that year?
Dave, I mean,
if you get this, I'll be shocked.
Lee Gorin.
Good Winnipeg boy. Sergei Shirokov.
Okay.
58 points. Billy Sweat was second.
Thank you for that useless trivia. That's a good contribution.
Courtesy of Hockey DB, Drew.
That's good. I'm glad that you're able to use the computer as well as the rest of us. But anyways, the Minnesota Wild are going home. The Vancouver Canucks are moving on. The Pittsburgh Penguins are going home as well. The Montreal Canadiens are moving on. You know, the Wild and the Canucks series was a bit of a toss-up. It was an 8-9
series.
Well,
you and I were wrong. As he was right.
As he was right, absolutely. I thought that the Wild were going to win. I thought Ryan Suter would be the difference.
And hold on, guys. Let's get this out of the way right now. I've only got two series right, so I've got the big brain over here.
There's no ticker tape parade planned for you outside.
I got Carolina right, and I got Vancouver right, and I picked Toronto, so maybe I get that right. But the best I can do here, boys, is 3-5.
Well,
so
not great.
Solid C.
Yeah, which is something Ezzy's quite used to, let me tell you.
I don't know where you went, Dave, but that's an F in my books.
That's true. Dave's good. We'll deal with Dave's education level a little bit later on. But, you know, I can't believe, you know, less so about the Vancouver-Minnesota series, because, like I said, toss-up could have gone either way. Vancouver moves on. I can't believe that how Pittsburgh looked. And you heard what Marty Biron had talked about.
I still don't think they showed up for game four.
Right. Like, they were so just – there was no spirit to the Penguins' performance in this qualification round. I think it was Seth Rohrabaugh wrote about it as well, that this was a Penguins team that just looked like – they can just they can drop the puck and they don't really have to put out the effort, and they can win just based on skill and no effort. And we saw that obviously it didn't happen, that the Canadians were able to send the Penguins home. And so now you're going to have a final 16 that doesn't feature Sidney Crosby, that doesn't feature Connor McDavid, that doesn't feature Evgeny Malkin, that doesn't feature Leon Draisaitl, that doesn't feature Artemi Panarin. Thank goodness that Nathan MacKinnon is in the round robin part of this whole thing and not the qualification round. So there's at least still one superstar that's going to be represented in these coming playoffs.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And, you know, just going back to what you said, Drew, about Pittsburgh, I mean, getting shut out in Game 4 really is inexcusable. And, yes, Carey Price deserves all of the credit. He was sensational, not just getting the shutout in Game 4, but he was good all series long. And, you know, you could go up and down the roster and you could, you know, discuss, you know, which players needed to step up and everything like that. But they have no excuses when it comes to injuries. Like, it's not like the Penguins had, you know, Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine out of the lineup, right, Dave? So, I mean, Crosby and Malkin, were they excellent? No, I wouldn't say they were excellent. But when you go up and down that roster, you wonder, like, did we expect much more out of this Penguins team, considering that they were bounced by the Islanders last year in four games? Right, like my point is, like, that you go out and you acquire Jason Zucker, right? And we all agreed that was a really good trade. But Jason Zucker was a non-factor in this series, right? Like, there wasn't any player who you looked at on the Penguins and you said, okay, you know, this is the guy that is going to, you know, score some goals and get the Penguins back in this series. Like, it's just, to me, mind-boggling that the Penguins, since they won those two Stanley Cups, just seem to be a team that is good enough to get into the playoffs and really nothing else.
They're coasting, you know, to your point. They get in because they are laden with talent in Crosby and Malkin, and they're not going to miss the playoffs if those guys are healthy. But that extra gear that you need, that extra level that you need to win in the playoffs, they don't seem to be able to channel that emotion, to find that passion, Dave, in order to end up victorious, beyond their just when their level of skill will allow them to do it. They don't seem to have that extra gear anymore, and that, I think, is probably what's most disheartening for Penguins fans and for Penguins management, is they just can't find that next level to get to.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly say, I want to get Dave in here as well, but, you know, Evgeny Malkin obviously didn't have any goals in this series. I mean, you know, you acquired Patrick Marleau prior to the trade deadline. I mean, was he even noticeable out there? No. Chris Letang had no points in the series. So, again, we can go up and down the roster, guys, and, you know, we can talk about guys that really didn't show up to play, really. Like, the Penguins, again, Carey Price was good. I think you could argue that, you know, he was clearly better than Matt Murray and Tristan Jarry. Yeah. But you could also say that the Penguins were a no-show in this series. Really, like top to bottom. Like, to me, Sidney Crosby, you know, at times looked like he was trying to do it all himself.
You know, there's a couple teams with these first-round losses, these qualification round losses, that have significant questions. You know, the Nashville Predators, as currently constructed, have reached a ceiling.
Yes.
What does David Poile do to change that up? The Pittsburgh Penguins, as currently constructed, have reached a ceiling.
It's a good comparison, Drew, because you had the Nashville Predators going up against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Stanley Cup final, right? And so these are two teams that were, quote-unquote, not only Stanley Cup contenders, the Penguins won two cups in a row, right? And so now you have these two teams that have lost players. Their older players are getting older, right? Like, to me, Crosby and Malkin still have four or five good years.
But the moves that their aggressive general managers have made, because both Jim Rutherford and David Poile can be considered aggressive general managers, the moves that those GMs have made have not worked out and have not translated into certainly playoff success.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, at the end of the day, Drew, there are moves that they felt that they needed to make in order to make their team better. So
I'm not saying the moves were wrong.
No,
they haven't worked out.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, but you have to give them credit for at least taking a swing. Because we've seen it throughout the NHL where guys will play it safe and not make any big moves.
Here in Winnipeg, we know that Kevin Cheveldayoff is gun-shy.
Well, I'd say his last big move was acquiring, what, Stastny?
That was a big move for a rental. He has not made a what I'll describe as a
big player for player. Yeah.
A big player for player hockey trade,
right,
where he sees a weakness on his roster, yeah, and he subtracts from an area of strength to address a weakness. He has not really done that at all, I would say. I mean, the player for player trade, of course, was Evander Kane, and there were other circumstances.
Well, that was a good one that worked out for the Jets, obviously. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, we can look back, and hindsight is obviously always going to be 20/20, and say, well, you know what, these moves didn't work out. But I'm just saying that there's a certain level of credit that you have to give them for taking a swing and missing.
Just when you can take a swing, you can win. Jim Benning, I mean, you know, mea culpa, certainly
on the
from
Miller.
My part. The JT Miller trade. I mean, we criticized it on this radio station.
You did.
I did.
Only you.
At the draft last year, I said that is not a good move. You know, I said the Canucks were not a team that was
ready. You said they were a rebuilding team.
Yeah, they were not ready to make that move, mm-hmm, to acquire JT Miller and to give up a first-round pick for it. And I was clearly 100% wrong about that. So my apologies.
All joking aside, Drew, a lot of people were.
Right, I know. But, I mean, I'm saying, you know, there was a general manager who made an evaluation on his team,
yep,
made a big trade, which is anytime you're trading a first-round pick for a roster player, that's a big trade, and it has worked out eminently well for the Vancouver Canucks.
And it helps to have Quinn Hughes putting up, you know, 55 points or whatever. I don't know how many people saw that coming,
but
right?
But he struck when he thought that iron was hot, and for that he deserves credit.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I think Jets fans want to see from Kevin Cheveldayoff this offseason, is him using maybe that 9th overall pick or that 10th overall pick, if it's not first overall, and addressing that need, be it a left side defenseman, top four, or that second line center, whatever it might be, really quick. As Jody Shelley's coming, Corey Lavalette's coming up in a moment.
Yeah, just wanted to say quickly, I realized that, you know, the Penguins didn't play well, but when you look at how the Penguins played all year long through adversity, right, like we talked, mm-hmm, about the injuries, I mean, Crosby was injured, Letang was injured, I mean, so many guys on this team were injured. All of the advanced stats were saying that the Penguins were a team that you should look out for. That's all I'm saying. I mean, the Penguins aren't a bad team.
Right.
I really just didn't think that they were ready to elevate their game for this qualifying round. Like, I just didn't think, like, I know, I realize it's very simplistic to say this. I just don't think they played very well.
One team that certainly elevated their game in the qualifying round were the Carolina Hurricanes, the only team to register a sweep, that being against the New York Rangers. When we come back, Corey Lavalette, who covers the team for the North State Journal, is going to join us to talk about the Hurricanes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Just announced, coming to Rumors, a concert series event, Jeremy Hotz will be at Rumors coming up in September. Tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the North State Journal, he covers the Carolina Hurricanes. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Corey Lavalette. Corey, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are things in North Carolina?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Doing very well, Corey. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Hurricanes, who I think most people would say have been the most impressive of all the teams that were participating in the qualification round. They relatively easily dispatched the New York Rangers in 3 games straight. Corey, if you had to look at this Hurricanes team right now, and you look at the forward group, and you look at the defense, and you look at the goaltending, what is an area of weakness at the moment? Because right now this Hurricanes team really does seem to be clicking on all cylinders.
It's hard to find one right now. I think the questions are always going to come to the goaltending and whether or not it can hold up. And when it faces adversity, are either Peter Mrazek or James Reimer going to be able to, are those two guys Stanley Cup winning goalies? who knows if we'll find out or not, but I think that's always the question mark. But the way they performed in those three games against the Rangers, against a team that kind of had their number all season, and particularly two guys in Mika Zibanejad and Artemi Panarin, who both kind of had their way with the Hurricanes, the way they handled them in those three games bodes well for the goaltending. So it's hard to find any weaknesses right now. You know, obviously they probably want to see more depth scoring and less, maybe not less from the top three guy, the top line and the top three guys, but a little more spread out goal scoring. But it's hard to find fault with much of what they did in those three games.
Corey, obviously Sebastian Aho and Andrei Svechnikov were sensational in these three games versus the New York Rangers. And specifically, I wanted to ask you about Svechnikov because second overall pick goes after Rasmus Dahlin, went first overall in that 2018 draft. Everybody knows that he's a really young, skilled player, but you know that hat trick in Game 2 versus the New York Rangers, do you think that performance specifically made some people in the hockey world maybe wake up a little bit and realize not only is this guy a really good young player, but this is a guy that could, you know, finish maybe as high as top five in the league in scoring one day?
I hope people have taken notice. You know, the thing that was amazing about that performance was he scored three different ways. And we know there's more ways he can score too, obviously. He's a superstar in the making. He's, you know, his teammates voted him the hardest working guy on the team this year. The first time that's ever happened for someone his age. The coach loves him. He loves the coach. I mean, he's everything Rod Brind'Amour wants out of a player. He's a guy who loves hockey and always wants to get better. And, you know, he's a superstar, and it helps that he's got two guys on his line that I think are both underrated as well. You know, you mentioned Sebastian too, but Teuvo Teravainen has become just, I think, one of the best two-way players in hockey. And, you know, it takes pressure off Andre from having to worry too much about that side of his game, though he's become pretty responsible defensively. But Teuvo is a great defensive player. And, you know, and then Andre's able to be the physical guy on that line. Even those two smaller guys are not scared to get into dirty areas. It's, yeah, Andre's amazing. Really, really, really nice young man, too. Just really affable and fun-loving. And he loves hockey, and he wants to get better. And that's scary for the rest of the league, I think.
Well, we're a Manitoba Bay show, Corey, so I'm going to ask you about a Manitoba boy, Strathclair, Manitoba's Morgan Geeky. What has he meant for this Carolina Hurricanes team?
Well, I think, you know, yes, we're months and months removed, but he had the two-game debut where he got called up and, you know, had those two fantastic games right before everything got shut down. And, you know, like I said about Andre, he kind of plays the style that Rod Brind'Amour wants. He wants somebody who's going to be responsible both ways. He wants somebody who's going to make smart plays, and that's what Morgan's done so far. I mean, he's a meat and potatoes player. He gets to the front of the net, which is something that I think every coach in the NHL preaches, but he does it. He's a big body. He's not the best skater in the world, but, you know, you don't have to be if you're smart. If you get to the right areas, you don't have to be a fantastic skater. You know, John Tavares had the knock forever about, oh, he's not the greatest skater in the world. I'm not saying Morgan Geeky is the next John Tavares, but you know, if you're smart about what you're doing and your responsibilities, then your skating can be half a step slower, especially when you're playing with a line that creates a lot of chaos. And that fourth line was, you know, I think was better than any line on the Rangers in that series. So kudos to him. I mean, young kid, and he's basically knocked Ryan Dzingel out of the lineup with the way he's played, because he's proven he can play in the middle as a kid. So just really impressive. And another kid that's, you know, got a bright future.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Corey Lavallette. He covers the Carolina Hurricanes for the North State Journal. Corey, sounds like Dougie Hamilton is getting very close to returning to the lineup for the Hurricanes. Practicing yesterday is ahead of the start of the official first round of the playoffs. When Dougie Hamilton returns to the lineup, what does that do to the Hurricanes' defense, and who comes out of the lineup in his stead?
It's gonna be a tough decision for Rod about who comes out. You know, I think Dougie will jump right probably back in with Jacob Slavin. Sammy Vatanen did a good job there. Foot speed was a problem defensively a couple times in the Rangers series with Vatanen. But if you can take Vatanen and move him into a role where he's not facing top guys like he was in the Rangers series, he was still very productive and put up points, and he can obviously move the puck. As for who comes out, it'll be interesting. I think, you know, both Boston and Washington, whoever ends up being the opponent, have some bodies that are big and tough to deal with, and Joel Edmondson maybe brings a little more of that snarl to the lineup. Hayden Fleury has the capability of doing that, but at times maybe plays a little too much of a finesse game. I think one of those two guys, but at the same time, you've got Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who hasn't played yet, and he proved last year in the Washington series before he got hurt that he could do a really good job against the Capitals. So there's a ton of options. I mean, it's a nice problem to have, I'd say, if you've got all of a sudden eight defensemen that you're confident playing with. And, you know, Hayden Fleury was kind of the odd man out most of the year, but he's coming into it. He's getting there, and I think deserves a shot. But tough decisions ahead, but Rod's made all the right decisions so far, right? I mean, between the goaltending and Geeky and you know, some of the other calls he's made, he hasn't made a bad decision yet, so we'll see where he goes with that.
You know, Corey, just sticking with the defensemen, and obviously, you know, Carolina, you know, we talked about Svechnikov and Aho, Teravainen. I mean, they've got a lot of good offensive players. I mean, Niederreiter, Natchez, you know, a good young player from the Czech Republic. But, you know, just sticking with the defense there, and that's one of the reasons why I picked the Hurricanes. Obviously, you know, my predictions don't matter at all because I'm 2-5 right now. But when you talk about, you know, losing Brett Pesce and Dougie Hamilton, right, like two top four defensemen, if any other team loses those top four defensemen, you're really concerned. But, you know, we went up and down the lineup, and with Slavin and Joel Edmondson, Brady Shea, Vatanen comes in, doesn't play during the regular season for the Hurricanes, but he goes right up to that top pair, and then Jake Gardiner and Hayden Fleury is your third pair. Like, how much credit does Don Waddell deserve for putting together, you know, arguably one of the deepest group of defensemen that we've ever seen? You, and you also mentioned Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who's a pretty good defenseman. He can't even crack, you know, the top six.
Yeah, I mean, the Vatanen deal was about Dougie's injury, and it looked like maybe they were just going to have a surplus there because Dougie was lined up to be ready for that first series until he had an injury in practice. So, you know, it worked out that they needed him anyway. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of credit is due. And then, I mean, we're not even considering Jake Bean, who's, you know, was the top defenseman in the AHL this year, and I mean, he's number nine right now. I mean, it's a pretty insane amount of talent. Now they've got, you know, a few guys that will probably move on after this year. You know, Van Riemsdyk's a free agent. Edmondson's a free agent. Hard to see either of them back. Vatanen obviously will be a free agent. But even if that's the case, you still have six guys that probably belong in the NHL right there. So yeah, I mean, Don Waddell's done a great job, and you know, the way this team has built depth compared to, you know, where they were prior to, and credit goes to Tom Dundon too, being willing to spend the money. You know, where they were before Tom Dundon came on, you know, there's no way they've got this kind of depth. But, you know, spending to the cap and, you know, stockpiling assets, young assets, and then using them to go get players. You know, you can trade guys and go get a Vincent Trocheck. If you've got young players all through your lineup that aren't going to get moved out of spots, you know, you can improve yourself that way. So, yeah, a lot of credit. They've done a really good job building a solid team. And, you know, like we talked about off from Jump Street, it's just, is the goaltending going to be good enough?
You know, Corey, we don't know who the Carolina Hurricanes will play in the first round because obviously the round robin hasn't finished and that's still to be determined. But we do know it'll either be the Capitals or the Bruins. Which team do you think Carolina best matches up against?
You know, it's tough. I mean, I think they're both good teams. Obviously, they played both of them in the playoffs last year, had the seven-game series they won with the Capitals, and then had the Bruins series where they got swept out. Kind of got taught a little lesson about playoff hockey, I think. You know, the Bruins haven't looked great, but with all those guys on there, who knows how much they're really putting into this round robin effort, and if they really care whether or not, you know, they have home ice throughout, since everybody's going to be playing in the same rink anyway. All it is last change, really. So, you know, my gut says that the Capitals are a better fit. I think if Ilya Samsonov was available, then maybe that's a little scarier. But at the same time, you know, they faced Igor Shesterkin, who I think is, you know, on that same level of being one of the great young goalies in the league, and they found a way there too. So, you know, they're going to have to go through tough teams either way. They may have to go through both these teams either way if they want to make a run to the Stanley Cup. So, you know, they have the experience against both teams. I think Washington probably is maybe a better matchup for them, but you know, I just don't know what to think of Boston at this moment, you know, with the way they're playing, and they've kind of been a slow starting team in recent years, and with this huge layoff, are they going to struggle? I don't know. It's been a wild postseason so far, as we learned last night with that Toronto game, so who knows anymore?
Absolutely. Who knows anymore is exactly right, Corey. Corey Lavallette covers the Carolina Hurricanes for the North State Journal. Corey, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys. Anytime, and enjoy the rest of the postseason.
Likewise, Corey. Take care. When we come back, we talk about the Blue Jackets and Maple Leafs. They're going 5 after that epic comeback by the Leafs last night. The Islanders, Panthers. The Panthers move on, and we also talk about more on the Carolina Hurricanes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Riley keeps the puck in on the wing for Tavares in front of the net. They score! They score! Austin Matthews has won the game! The Leafs win it in overtime!
Well, let's park the cliches or maybe come up with some new ones. And we are going to Game 5 on Sunday.
An epic comeback last night for the Toronto Maple Leafs, trailing by 3 goals with a little less than 4 minutes to play. Miracles do happen to Toronto as opposed to just against Toronto.
It's the old reverse Bruins Game 7.
That's right. They score 3 times in regulation to send it to overtime. They then win in overtime to send it to a Game 5 tomorrow evening. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290. Let's check out the Odds Shark inbox presented by Odds Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. At the beginning of the show, we had asked, are the Jets still an upper echelon NHL team? And if not, what needs to happen for them to regain that standing? Lots of comments coming in via Twitter, via text. Brian Harder says, the Jets are not an upper echelon team, but they are not far off. The Jets need to add some bigger D that are mobile. Unfortunately, one of those players we had is in Montreal now, that, of course, being Ben Chiarot. We have too many smaller D in the system. Nyku, Pionk, Josh Morrissey, Vinny Hainola. Those guys are too small, according to Brian. We need to get some more physicality and bigger size on the Jets' defense. Other comments coming in via our text message. Send your text to 129090. It's ridiculous to listen to those suggestions that lineup changes would raise the Jets to upper echelon because the current GM would never make them. So this is some criticism being leveled at Kevin Cheveldayoff and his hesitancy to make moves. The Jets might need to make moves, but they do not think that the general manager will pull the trigger on those moves. So we want to hear more from you via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Also send us your text to 129090, where standard messaging rates do apply.
I just want to say one thing, though, in terms of, you know, that last comment. You know, after the trade deadline, you know, going into the pause there, the acquisitions of Dylan DeMello and Cody Eakin looked pretty good, right? Yeah. So I would, you know, hold off on the criticism of Chevy here. Obviously, you know, when the Jets lose the qualification round, you know, the criticism starts to come out. But all I'm saying is the Dustin Byfuglien situation handcuffed Chevy. We know that. He couldn't use that cap space because they thought that Buff was going to come back. And then, you know, prior to the trade deadline, as I mentioned, DeMello and Eakin were pretty good acquisitions. Maybe not Eakin as a second-line center, but, you know, as a depth center. So all I'm saying is a lot of those people that were praising Chevy with those two moves now are criticizing Chevy and saying that he didn't do enough. So I'll play the devil's advocate there.
I think what people want to see is something happen in the off season to improve the team going forward at the start of the season, as opposed to waiting for the trade deadline, or waiting sort of to be reactive as opposed to proactive.
And the Jets have lots of cap space, Drew, so that's not an issue.
They certainly do. Anyways, Facebook and Instagram posts, your text, your tweets, we find them in the Odd Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net. Okay, looking towards tomorrow evening, it's going to be the Blue Jackets and the Maple Leafs in the final of the qualification round series. It's the only one that's going to a game five. The Blue Jackets had the epic collapse last night. Can they come back? Do you think they will come back? Or is that collapse going to be too much for them to overcome and the Leafs will end up moving on to the playoffs? Yes. What do you think happens in that altogether important game five tomorrow evening?
I mean, flip a coin, right? I mean, like, we shouldn't be surprised that the Leafs and the Blue Jackets was the only series that went to Game 5 because of the Leafs-Bruins, you know, Game 7 back-to-back, right, Dave? So, I mean, that was kind of funny. But also, you know, I did text Zach Hyman before the game, and I told him that it was your birthday, Drew. So I told him if he could score a goal. I didn't realize he was going to score it so late in the third period, but that was my birthday present to you from Zach Hyman.
Thank you.
So, you know,
random,
when you...
thank you.
Happy belated birthday, by the way. I did text you.
Text me. I got to interrupt you. Dave Manuk over here texted me about 14 different times yesterday, a back-and-forth conversation.
I imagine
right? No, about the show, about tweeting, about a little bit about softball, things of that nature, back and forth.
He was asking you for recipes.
Back and
forth.
When's
my birthday, Drew?
Did not get one text that
said, "When's
happy." I have no idea when your birthday
there
is.
There you go.
But it doesn't matter. You knew it was my birthday.
No, I didn't know it was your birthday.
You didn't know it was my birthday?
I swear to God. I had no idea.
Oh, well, then, I mean,
Drew, to be honest with you, I don't know your last name. I don't know how you got in my house.
What do you think happens tomorrow night in that key game five between the Leafs and the
Blues? You know what? I think Ezzie's right in the sense that I think it's a toss up. I think that, you know, both these teams have shown that they can score. Both these teams can get it done. I'm leaning Leafs. I actually think that the Leafs have a tremendous amount of talent, and I don't know. I just have this feeling that comeback victory is not going to be in vain for Toronto. And I think that, you know, their guns led them, you know, Austin Matthews and John Tavares, Zach Hyman had a big, big goal, William Nylander. I'm inclined to go with Toronto tomorrow. I think Toronto's going to pick up a very important kind of series win for that young group.
And it's been such an up and down series, right, guys? Because obviously Columbus shuts out Toronto game one, right? Eunice Corpusalo's in net.
Yeah.
And then Toronto shuts out Columbus in game two. And then in game three, you obviously see Elvis Merzlikins come in relief of Corpusalo with the Blue Jackets down 3-0. And then in game four, Merzlikins was lights out the first couple periods, right, guys? Like, when Boone Jenner scored that goal, guys, in the third period, you're thinking to yourself, okay, the Leafs are down 2-1 in the series. They're down 3-0 in the game. Like, this is over.
And that's like 5 minutes to go.
And that's why that comeback was so miraculous, right? Like, when you consider, you know, the Leafs score those three goals with under 4 minutes left, like, you just don't really see that often. I think it was the first time in Leafs history that's ever happened, right? So obviously, you know, the Leafs have found their offensive touch, but earlier on in the series, I mean, you weren't getting a lot of production up and down the lineup here. So, I mean, on paper, the Leafs are a much more skilled team. And, you know, when you talk about that top line, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and John Tavares, they're now together, and I don't see any reason why Sheldon Keefe, based on what happened, you know, to end that third period and in the overtime with Austin Matthews, like, really turning it up, I don't think that there's any reason to think that he's not going to keep those big three together.
Who does Columbus turn to in goal? We've seen both goalies look unbelievable. We've also seen both goalies struggle in sort of quick spurts. Is Merzlikins is he damaged goods, for lack of a better term,
because of how the game
ended?
I don't think so.
So do you go with Merzlikins or do you go with Corpusalo?
I mean, Merzlikins came in and was really good in game three, and you win the game, right? And then in game four, he's really good, with the exception of the last 4 minutes. So to me, I'm with Marty Biron. I think you go back to Elvis Merzlikins. He was really good during the regular season. Jonas Corpusalo has obviously the experience, and we know that Tortorella obviously, you know, put some stock into that because he put him in game one, but I really think that, you know, it's a toss-up. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, Drew, put it this way, if Torts goes back to Korpisalo.
Dave?
I mean, I'm inclined to go with Merzlikens. I think that the fact is, to Ezzie's point, I think he made 97 straight saves for the Blue Jackets before Toronto started to solve him. So, yeah, you know, you could say he's damaged goods because of what happened. But, like, to me, he put you in a pretty good position. And the truth is, if Pierre-Luc Dubois puts that puck into the empty net rather than putting it into the side of the net, we're not even having this conversation because Toronto, in desperation, you know, got close, but ultimately Columbus would have looked like they would have pulled off the victory and would have walked away with the series win. So
Columbus had a lot of chances to score into the empty net to either make it 4-1 or 4-2.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were a number of it wasn't just Dubois. I think maybe I don't remember who it was, but someone else in front of the net had a wide open net. One of the Leafs slid in front and blocked. I think it was Nylander blocked it. So you had a lot of instances where they could have had an empty net goal and won.
Just really quickly, Zach Werenski didn't finish the game for Columbus. We got to ask Jody Shelley coming up here because Werenski and Jones have been so good as that shutdown pair.
Yeah.
So I mean, if they don't have Werenski, I think, you know, the Leafs have a huge advantage there.
It might not matter who's in goal if they don't have Werenski. We'll talk about that with Jody Shelley coming up next. Jody, of course, is a Columbus Blue Jackets analyst. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290, trying to get a hold of Columbus Blue Jackets analyst Jody Shelley, talk about the team ahead of tomorrow evening's Game 5 between the Leafs and the Blue Jackets after that epic Toronto Maple Leafs comeback.
Countdown? What is this, the Care Bears?
Well, Dave distracted me by showing me a tweet or a picture.
Do a Care Bear countdown now, Drew?
We should have a Care Bear countdown.
Care Bear stare?
Yeah. How about an
5, 4, 3?
How about an Ez Bear comeback countdown?
He's kind of, Ez, he's kind of like formed like a Care Bear.
He looks like a Care Bear. There's
a little bit of a Care Bear tummy.
Yeah, there's definitely a resemblance. I mean, he would be the Care Bear called Harry, but I'm not sure anybody actually wants to see anything coming out of his belly either. Some rainbows or whatever, or sparkles coming out of there.
Hungry Bear.
Yeah, you're definitely the Hungry Bear. Anyways, like I said, trying to get a hold of Jody Shelley. If we're able to, we'll bring him to you on the program. The other two series in the Eastern Conference that ended pretty quickly. The Islanders dispatched the Florida Panthers by that 3-1 series victory after a commanding 5-1 win yesterday. And then the Hurricanes easily take care of the New York Rangers by that 3-0 margin, the clean sweep there. You know, I think if you're the Rangers, you know, the result is disappointing, obviously. You don't want to lose three straight, but, you know, you can acknowledge that you really didn't expect to be a playoff team and that you got beaten by a better team in the Carolina Hurricanes. The question is about the Florida Panthers is where do they go from here? This is a Panthers team that has a lot of money tied up on their back end, and they absolutely couldn't get a save from Sergei Bobrovsky if their life depended on it.
At least he's not making too much money.
No, he's only making $10 million a year for the foreseeable future. It sounds like Dale Tallon is going to be out with no official announcement, as we referenced earlier in the show, so that's a big question in Florida. That's another one of these qualification round teams that's at a bit of a crossroads after their team is defeated. I mean, more questions than answers for a lot of these teams, like the Jets, like the Predators, like the Penguins, and now you can certainly add the Florida Panthers to that list of teams as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you score 7 goals in 4 games, guys. I mean, that's not a recipe for success, right? And obviously, you know, Sergei Bobrovsky wasn't excellent in this series, especially in Game 4, but you know, Florida's power play, I think, was just under 30%, 28.5%, if I'm not mistaken. They just weren't good enough 5-on-5 versus the Islanders, right? Like, the Islanders, I think, made the Panthers look very flawed. And, you know, aside from Mike Hoffman and Alexander Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau.
Hoffman's a free agent, of course, at season's end
and,
now.
And, you know, you just see the lack of offensive ability. I really like Evgeny Dadonov. Like, I think he's a really good you know, top 6 forward, a guy that, you know, you saw on the power play has a lot of ability and
also
has
a free agent at season's end.
Well, and, you know, you wonder, like, to me, you know, between Dadonov and Hoffman, you probably would love to keep both of those guys, but you can probably only keep at most one of those guys. Like, to me, Dadonov would probably be the guy that I would lean towards would be more likely to re-sign, you know, and that's just, you know, a hunch that I have there based on, you know, the salary cap space that they have there. But, I mean, the Panthers go out and they give Sergei Bobrovsky the big contract. They bring in Joel Quenneville, who's one of the higher paid coaches, and you can't even get into the playoffs, right? Like, and we knew, guys, that, you know, the best of five qualification round was going to be completely unpredictable, right? And to me, that wasn't a good first round matchup. Like, the Islanders, we talked about this, such a good defensive team, mm-hmm. strong in goal. Like, I remember when we previewed this series last week, we were kind of looking for an edge on either team. And really, there's a lot of similarities here, but you maybe give Bobrovsky the edge because he's got the Vezina trophy over Semyon Varlamov, but Varlamov, Dave, was much better mm-hmm. than Bobrovsky, and, you know, has been a good goalie for years, right? We know how good he was for Colorado. So, you know, just unfortunate. Didn't seem like the Panthers, similar, I think, to the Pittsburgh Penguins, like watching these two series, and I'll admit, I didn't watch, you know, every single minute, every single game, but I obviously watched the highlights and tried to watch as much as I could. It's tough to watch every game, guys, when you have six games a day and you're working, right? And also with the kids. So, I mean, I just think Florida wasn't good enough. They didn't score enough, and they have a lot of needs to address. Like, this is a team, when you look at, you know, bringing in a goaltender, that was the thing that we talked about for years. Like, Florida needs to bring in that number one goaltender. They really, you know, were looking for that for so long. But then Bobrovsky was just average, if not below average. Now you have to almost talk about a rebuild here.
It is a very bizarre situation. I mean, you bring in Joel Quenneville to be your head coach because you think your team is close to competing
yep.
for a championship.
Yep. He's not a rebuild coach.
No, he's not a rebuild coach. I mean, Joel Quenneville's a great coach, but he's not typically a guy, you know, you're paying your coach a lot of money mm-hmm. because you think he's going to be the difference. You know, they thought that a combination of Quenneville and Bobrovsky is what takes them over the top. That's going to be the secret to their, you know, getting success, long-term success, playoff run success. Now that's not the case. If you are, in fact, changing general managers with Dale Tallon, you know, You have to assume that whoever the new GM is going to be is going to be happy with Joel Quenneville as their head coach. It's just a lot of, you know, another ton of questions there in Florida for another offseason.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's, you know, rinse and repeat with the Florida Panthers, right? They just kind of almost like the Arizona Coyotes, that you expect the franchise to finally kind of get some traction. They've put up with years of not having success mm-hmm. and not, you know, really being able to be considered a team that's going to make any noise. You know, look, they've got some very nice pieces on that team, but yeah, to your point, Drew, it just seems like it's just another lost season for Florida. And, you know, to me, that series, I mean, I like the Islanders, and they play a very structured game, not a game that one would call very exciting.
Right. But successful
for sure. And look, you can say whatever you want. Barry Trotz is one of the best coaches
sure.
in the NHL. The guy knows how to get the most out of his team. And he can analyze what his assets are, figure out how to play them properly. And he's just a heck of a good coach and happens to be a Manitoba boy. That always helps. But to me, you know, you're right. It wasn't a great matchup because of his structure, because of his ability, and because of the flaws in Florida that they'd be able to really counter what he was able to do against them. But overall, I'm not terribly surprised that the Islanders came up with that win.
You know, just going back to the Florida Panthers, you wonder if they do something similar to what the Jets did, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when they say, you know, we're just not quite good enough right now. We need to go with the young players, right? Like, we might be good enough just to get into the playoffs, mm-hmm. maybe win a round. But, you know, you look at some of the young players, Dave, you know, guys like Henrik Borgstrom, who had a really good season with the Springfield Thunderbirds, right? Like, this is a 2016, the Lion A draft. He mm-hmm. was a late first-round pick. Grigory Denisenko is a guy that I know that the Panthers are really high on. Spencer Knight had a really good first year with Boston College. He's their goalie of the future, right?
Right.
So you look at some of these first-round picks, and you know that these guys, you know, a year or two from now are going to have an impact in the NHL. Maybe Spencer Knight's a little further off because right. he's a goalie. He's yeah. only, you know, 19, 20 years old, right? But the Panthers do have some exciting young prospects. So you wonder with, you know, the Mike Hoffmans and the Dadonovs, you know, as pending UFAs, you wonder if they say, okay, you know what? We're going to have, you know, 2 or 3 years here where we're a little bit light on, you know, top-end talent. But we know that we have to rebuild this thing because you know, unless the Panthers go out and they're very active in free agency or they're active, you know, in regards to trades, I don't know if they're one or two or even three moves away from turning this around. Like, to me, this is a team that never really even got to the window opening.
Well, and you know what's, I think, so troubling for the Panthers is that you look at their back end, and their back end should be the strength of their team.
Right.
And it's not, I don't know if it's the style of play that they play, if it's a lack of attention to detail, but they have so much money locked up on that back end between Ekblad, Yandel, Strawman, and Matheson that you don't have a ton of flexibility.
And Matheson there was a healthy scratch, wasn't he?
I believe he was for the final game because he's been, he's a guy who.
No, it was. I think it was the third game.
It was the third game.
I think the game that they ended up winning was that was the game where they dumped like 3-4 guys out of the lineup and brought in a bunch of new guys.
And when you're going through that kind of roster churn, I think at that point, it's emblematic that things are not perfect. Things are not right if you are having to turn over that level of player despite it being that late in a series at that point in time.
And I think, what we have to, cue in on, and it's kind of what we've been talking about, is the fact that, this is a team that you're looking to have some success for. They've been in the playoffs twice in the last 18 years prior to this play-in series.
Every year they seem like the hot team up and coming, and every year they fail. They end up disappointing. Okay, let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll bring Jody Shelley on now. We'll do a quick segment with him before we have to wrap up this morning's program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We want to hear from you. You can send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is, of course, illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Jody Shelley. You know Jody, of course, as a Columbus Blue Jackets analyst. The Blue Jackets and the Maple Leafs, the only game 5 of the qualification round. That'll go tomorrow night. Jody, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Jody. Obviously, a disheartening end to Game 4 last night. The Blue Jackets with that 3-goal lead late in the third period. It seemed like they were all but certain to move on to the round of 16. The Maple Leafs come back with that epic comeback. You know, Jody, obviously the big question is I guess, why that Leafs comeback happened. And then secondly, who would you be starting in goal tomorrow night? Do you go back to Merzlikins or do you go back to Korpisalo?
Well, I'll start with that one first. I would go to Korpisalo. I just think the meltdown in the last 3 minutes of that game, I don't know. I think you go back to Korpisalo. I don't think you can go wrong with either one. But Korpisalo gets yanked. Elvis got his chance. He let in three or four goals there at the end. He's had his chance. I think you'd go back with Korpisalo there. Korpisalo's been waiting. He wants to be the man to prove this and get the net back. When you have a competition like this, they cheer for each other, but he wants back in. And why that happened last night, I go back to the second period, and anytime there's a loss, go back and you look at things over. I just saw, the Kukin fight happens, and you could tell the guys were surprised, and, there was a little bit of let up. There was a few smiles, and I was like, okay, that's good, but get back to that focus of playing that playoff hockey. And then they started to mess around a little bit, took a penalty there at the end of the second period. The third period was fine. It kind of went along. And then, I don't know, I think there's a, you're up 3-0. There's under 5 minutes left. You see the coach and the opposition drawing up a play, and you're kind of like, yeah, right. You know what I mean? Like, it's over. And then you score those two quick ones, and it's hard to digest it as a player. But then you go back and see the empty net shots that are missed. So what they did is they took their foot off the gas a little bit, and the Toronto Maple Leafs, Austin Matthews did nothing the whole game. He was waiting for a spark, it looked like, or waiting for something to happen. And when it did happen late, he came alive, and he just took over the game, and the Blue Jackets couldn't stop it. They just slid, and the Leafs got the win, and they were stunned. We're all stunned. But the good news is that wasn't Game 5, that was Game 4. So Game 5 is still available. And the Blue Jackets, and what a series. It's been so even. This is going to be quite a matchup tomorrow night.
Jody, we have to ask you about Zach Werenski. He's been so good, you know, both during the regular season and in this qualification round against the Leafs, obviously paired up, you know, with Seth Jones. They've been so fantastic. But, you know, there's an injury in the third period there. We're not really sure what it is. It looked like he had a really good scoring chance there. And then he's tripped by Mitch Marner. Marner gets the penalty. You know, he goes to the bench. And, you know, we've all seen, you know, the video, whether you were watching it live. I mean, he looks like the trainer was, you know, working on his shoulder a little bit there. We don't, again, we don't know what the injury is. Is there any further update there on Zach Werenski? And if he's not available to go tomorrow night, I mean, what do the Blue Jackets do there? Who would come into the lineup?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because Murray, who's been injury-plagued for quite some time and a key member of this team, he didn't play. He was a late scratch going into last night's game. Then you lose Ryan Murray, Zach Werenski. So you've got two key players out in the defensive core, which has depth. But do you look to Andrew Peak, who's a rookie, who's a great skater and a heads-up player? Do you look to him, or do you go back to Nudavara, who had his chance and looked hesitant against the Maple Leafs? So, I don't know. Zach Werenski's a big loss, and we talk about all situations with him all the time. Defensively, he's great, but offensively and keeping plays alive and being just a guy that anticipates two plays ahead and plays so well with Seth Jones, it's a massive loss. And it's a loss all over and kind of the engine of the team is Werenski and Jones when it comes to setting the tempo and playing against and with and taking down top opponents. So I don't know who comes in. No, Nudavara or Peak, I think Harrington will stay in because he jumped in for Murray. He was pretty solid. But that would be a massive hole that the Toronto Maple Leafs would try to jump through if Werenski's not out.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Jody Shelley, Jody of Columbus, Blue Jackets analyst. The Blue Jackets and the Leafs, Game 5 goes tomorrow evening. Winner moves on, loser goes home.
You know, Jody, we look at that Game 2, and John Tortorella, Coach Tortorella, is yelling at Pierre-Luc Dubois, and of course the camera's catching everything because that's all they have to focus on right now. And the next game, Pierre-Luc Dubois shows what he's able to do, and he puts forward that a hat trick. You know, you played over 600 games in the NHL. Would that sort of tongue-lashing from your coach have any impact, or is it just part of the game?
You know, it definitely has an impact. I mean, you're in front of your peers. You know, Dubois got three guys under 22 right next to him there, including Foodie, who's a young kid. And, you know, Torts cares, and Torts sees a kid in Dubois who he's trying to stay on top of. And Dubois is a little bit of he knows what he has to do, and sometimes he doesn't want to hear it, and sometimes he just goes against the grain of Tortorella. It's just a human nature kind of relationship they have. It's two guys that are massive competitors, and Dubois expects a lot out of himself, and Torts expects a lot out of Dubois, and he sees him and sometimes just being inconsistent in some of the things he wants him to do. So, you know what? That was a moment that, you know, it was between a coach and a player. Do you like seeing it? I thought it was a bad look. I talked to Torts about it, and he said, no, listen. He takes no credit for Dubois' game three. He said that kid just came out and had a heck of a game. And, you know, Torts has been on him. Torts rides him. Torts knows that Dubois walks in this season after having a great season last year with Panarin, putting up some big numbers, think he's figured out. Well, when you think you have it figured out and you're a young player, John Tortorella is going to get in your face at moments like that, and it happens behind the scenes, and this happened to be in front of the camera, and he knows what's best for you, and he's done it time after time. And 5 or 6 years from now, when John Tortorella is gone and he's doing his thing with his family, Pierre-Luc Dubois will look back and think, you know what, that was the greatest thing for me ever. And, you know, Dubois, you guys are well informed, he's the son of a coach. And I think Torts has talked to Pierre-Luc Dubois' dad. And then, you know, there's an understanding of each player that's the responsibility of the coach, and he's going to get the most out of him for now and for years from now. He's going to have a long career.
If the series has been any indicator, Game 5 ought to be an epic between the Blue Jackets and the Leafs. It goes tomorrow night. Jody Shelley is an analyst on the Blue Jackets broadcast. Jody, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, enjoy the hockey, guys, and thank you so much for having me on. Have a great day.
You too, Jody. Take care. Thanks so much. That'll be a great game tomorrow night. Of course, the round robin is going to finish up as well this weekend. It's going to be there's the 1 versus 2 versus 3 versus 4 matchups in both the East and the West in terms of determining the final seeding. And that's it for this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to all of our guests on the program. You just heard from Jody Shelley. We are also joined by Corey Lavalette to discuss the Carolina Hurricanes, Marty Biron to discuss goaltending, and then Murat Attash back in hour number one to talk about the Winnipeg Jets. In case you missed any of the program, it'll be available for download on illegalcurve.com. It's going to be on tsn1290.ca. It's wherever you get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support the Legal Curve Hockey. Great job by Chris Curry back at the station doing his work as our producer. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.